You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station. The BFM Breakfast Grill. Top interviews you can't afford to miss. Presented by the CIMB Group.
With us this morning, Oscar De Bock, the South and Southeast Asia Chief Executive of the Supply Chain Division of DHL, the global logistics firm. Oscar, a very warm welcome to the Breakfast Room. We are very familiar with the DHL name as a logistics and courier company. However, DHL has a couple of massive subsidiaries, one of which, for example, includes Global Forwarding, and the other, of course, is Supply Chain, of which you are the South and Southeast Asia head. Do please tell us what the supply chain business involves.
Yes, could you mention that? Because DHL is actually equally split over three divisions, which is DHL Express, which we know from express deliveries around the globe. And then you got DHL Global Forwarding, which is the division for sea and air freight. And then there's DHL Supply Chain, which focus what we call contract logistics. But what it actually basically is the outsourcing of logistics services, being it warehousing, being it distribution, of each of the aspects of the supply chain. So it can be warehousing and distribution for retail at the end of the supply chain, so to bring it into the store. But it can also be components into a factory to do the inbound to manufacturing to a production in the automotive industry. Or it can be the parts, for example, if your computer breaks down, we also have the whole supply chain for spare parts around the globe. We have a business which is specifically in Asia, where within 2 hours a part would be at another location where it would need to be, for example, for a transmitter of mobile phone network, things like that. So supply chain is one third of the company, and it's focused on contract logistics, which is warehousing, transport, distribution, logistics services, and supply chain management.
Now, of course, you, DHL Supply Chain, you serve a myriad of industries, but some of the key ones could, for example, include automotive, as you say, consumer, retail and fashion, healthcare, life sciences, industrial and manufacturing. But each of those industries require different considerations. For example, in automotive, you need speed to market. And in consumer, you need to manage shorter product life cycles. And in, for example, retail and fashion, complex distribution is a challenge. So how does the supply chain division deal with these different competing considerations within these different industries?
I think it's a very interesting question, because so what we actually what we do is we are organized per sector, and we make sure that we have actually experts for each of the sectors. So as you rightfully mentioned, we got the automotive sector, which is an important sector for us, and we make sure that we got people that have a good background in automotive. But even within the sector, it can split between production, so inbound to manufacturing, or actually more the spare parts part, which is the after sales part of automotive. If you take consumer, which is the other sector, where we have people who have really a background in the consumer market, who have maybe worked in the supply chain part of some of the major consumer operators. Retail, a very specific market as well, with very specific requirements, which is very close to the market, which is in the end the supply to store, where we got a big position in, and we make sure that we have also there people who have actually worked within the retail industry. Technology, and that's a very big word, because technology can be the mobile phone industry, can be the consumer, the computer industry, but it's also parts for telecom networks. So we make sure that we have actually experts for each of those. Plus, on top of that, we make sure that we train people internally very well in those specific industries. And one of the things that we do is, for example, if we develop a specific sector in a new country, we make sure that we exchange people between countries, so that we actually transfer that expertise from the one to the other country and make sure that our global experience in certain sectors is actually shared between countries. So I think it's a very crucial point, the actual sector knowledge and sector expertise within supply chain management.
That's a fascinating point, Oscar, because, for example, under your jurisdiction, you also control South Asia, which is the Indian subcontinent. And you've mentioned earlier that you switch people between sections of your jurisdiction. So Indian workers would, for example, go to work in Indonesia, which is a big jurisdiction for you as well,
yeah.
And vice versa as well. Tell us, I mean, similar industries, different countries, different markets, but it's apparently seems to work. How?
Well, I think it depends how you reach markets. So how you read markets. So what is very important is indeed is the sharing of knowledge, expertise, and experience, and we do that as I said between countries. So the example you mentioned is where we would have people who have developed a certain sector or have developed a certain expertise, for instance, in transport, where very specific requirements of doing transport in, for example, India, being its systems, being its the way you plan, being the way you manage. That expertise can then actually be shared in that case with our organization in Indonesia, and we then exchange people between those two countries. Or it can also be, for example, we have a very strong position in retail in Thailand already for 15 years, that we actually take people from Thailand who we then exchange with, for example, in this case, Indonesia, to also assist there with the enormous growth in retail that we have over there at the moment. So that's, I believe, should be and is one of the advantages of a global company like DHL, is that that we actually, one, give the people the potential to grow by moving from the one to the other country, and on the other hand, give consistency to our customers by actually offering the same quality in country X as you do in country Y, spread over Southeast Asia.
Now, we live in green times, Oscar, and DHL has an avowed intention to cut emissions by a tenth, in fact, by 2012 last year, and as much as a third by 2020. But airplanes, ships, lorries continue to be the main transporters of cargo. So how do you plan to achieve these emissions reductions?
Yeah. So those are numbers that are for the complete DHL group, and I think we see that as a very important aspect is the whole Go Green agenda. Indeed, as you say, because we do use planes and trucks, and the way we achieve those things is obviously the type of trucks you use. So if you look in Southeast Asia, we recently have actually renewed a fleet. For example, in Thailand, we just ordered an additional 200 trucks of the latest technical requirements to actually reduce and to serve our overall, to reduce emission and serve our overall Go Green agenda. So it's a lot about the type of assets we use. It's also the way we manage our warehouses, the way we build our warehouses. So the latest warehouses that we build, we make sure that where it is economically viable, to make sure that we build as green as we can according to our global standards. So it's not only in trucks, it's also in the way you build your warehouses, the way you manage your people, the awareness that we create also with our people to have continuously serve the Go Green agenda. We measure closely within our organization the continuous reduction of emission.
Now, of course, DHL has always said that no supply chain ever achieves perfect equilibrium. And of course, as we know, the Thai floods and the Fukushima tsunami were grim reminders of these. But how, in terms of how DHL, the supply chain division, and of course in Thailand, where you have a big footprint, how did you handle those disruptions as they occurred?
Yeah, we got, and I think Thailand is a very good example of the floods. We got specific disaster recovery teams who actually are trained to provide the services in those occasions. So if you take in Thailand during the floods, in a few days we've actually set up emergency warehouses to be able to continue to supply the city of Bangkok with products into retail. We had three retail emergency centers spread over the city because basically all the warehouses in those times were difficult to reach, so we had to have those emergency centers. And we got whole teams that are educated, trained to actually manage those disasters. And that's one aspect. The other aspect is in how we design supply chains together with our with and for our customers, because you have to now consider that you can't put all your eggs in one basket and just be on one side of the city, have your whole supply chain dependent on one country. So you also have to, in your supply chain design, think about how do I design it that I can actually manage my supply chain also in case of natural disaster. So it is one is the prevention by the way we help our customers to design their supply chain, and the other thing is by having actually disaster recovery teams to be able to actually have the teams to make sure that supply chain, actually that the delivery continues also during the disaster, like happened in Bangkok recently.
Oscar De Bock, the South and Southeast Asia Chief Executive of the Supply Chain Division of DHL, the global logistics firm, with us on The Breakfast Room. After this, Oscar, the ASEAN story. We have with us this morning Oscar De Bock, the South and Southeast Asia CEO of the Supply Chain Division of DHL, the global logistics firm. Now, on to the opportunities of your jurisdiction, Oscar, and ASEAN, or Southeast Asia, with its rising middle class and 600 million population, combined GDP of $1.2 trillion, a population and an economy combined that rivals some developed countries. How does ASEAN compare with other fast-developing regions around the world, such as in, you know, Latin America or EMEA, which is, you know, Eastern Europe and Northern Africa?
Now, I think all of those markets are obviously important, but if you look at Southeast Asia and ASEAN, if you look at the growth of the middle class in that region is enormous, and that actually drives specifically the volumes of supply chain of the logistics supply in those markets. So if you take the 145 million people middle class that we have the year after next, that actually requires our customers, being it in the consumer, being it in retail, being in automotive, being in the technology industry, to heavily expand and continue to grow. And that's one of the reasons why we're sitting here today, are the investments that we're making in that market. It adds up to big numbers. We will have in 2015 we'll have 25,000 people in Southeast Asia, and that's in the supply chain division alone. We have expanded to about 1.4 million square meters of warehousing. That's to translate, that's about almost 200 soccer fields of warehousing together, which is what we're investing at the moment, and it's an increase of about 50% to what we have today. So those are all investments that we're making in Southeast Asia at the moment. So it's not only investing in buildings, but it's also in people, in the training of people, and also in transport assets, in transport management, and the systems related to that, which is all what is required in order to match what our customers are actually looking for, because in the end, that's a real driver of this, to meet those the growth in this market.
Oscar, the headline numbers are quite massive, 200 million euros, or about 181 million US dollars in terms of spend in Southeast Asia alone. The apportionment is roughly a third Indonesia, roughly a third Thailand, and roughly a third split between Vietnam, Malaysia, Singapore. Now, what are the intentions behind that that investment apportionment?
Now, if you take so the investment itself is focused on one is to build in all the tier one cities large multi-user logistics centers to our global standards. That's one thing. So that will be, for example, in Indonesia, a lot of that, as you mentioned, for example, would go to Indonesia. Part of that will go to Thailand, Vietnam, are important markets, and obviously Malaysia, where we are today, is a market where we make some investments in KL and Penang as well. So one is actually the logistics centers themselves. The other investment is in supply chain and transport management systems. The other investment is in transport, in the assets of it, and then the one is also in training centers. One thing that we didn't mention before is we also invest heavily in what we call operation simulation centers, where we actually train blue-collar and middle management staff in logistics management. Because if you look at the numbers of those big investments, like you were mentioning, the at 181 million US dollars of investments in Southeast Asia, that also requires people to manage that and people to manage our customer supply chain. And what is very important at this moment is to continue to invest in the training of people to actually meet those growth numbers.
Oscar De Bock, the South and Southeast Asia CEO of the Supply Chain Division of DHL, the global logistics firm, with us this morning. Now, of course, Malaysia, in terms of the apportionment of that spend, is very small, and so is Singapore. Incidentally, or not coincidentally, the two most matured countries within that five-country nexus. Now, why is that? Is it because of a cost of business issue? Is it because Malaysia is a smaller population? Or is it because it's further along the developed market chain?
Exactly. I think it has to do with, it's not so much, it has to do with the position that we already have. We have a very good market position in Malaysia already, and so do we have in Singapore, and the market is already very, is quite mature. But it's not that we don't make investments, obviously, in those markets. I think a very interesting part where we're focusing on is one is in South Malaysia, is actually the investments over there for the future cross-border logistics between Singapore and Malaysia, which is a big focus point. And then we are actually, as we speak, we're making we're opening a new facility in KL and in Penang at the moment as we speak as well. So we are making those investments, but indeed, if you look in percentages of growth, then obviously and the potential because of the number of inhabitants that, for example, Indonesia has, is that at this moment those are more accelerated growth. But Malaysia for us is still a very important market where we have a big market position.
Okay, so the most of the money is going towards Indonesia, Vietnam, and let's talk about the Indonesia proposition right now. According to Boston Consulting, by 2020, which is about 6 or 7 years from now, the middle class and the affluent class will be about 141 million people by that year, which is massive. That's bigger than the entire population of Thailand and a couple of smaller Southeast Asian countries. What does that mean for business in general and for in terms of DHL's proposition within that country?
So that actually means, and that's exactly the reason why we're making those investments that we're discussing today, because that means that we need to be ready for our customers with to be able to support their growth, being it in managing their transport, being it in being able to have the flexibility and the capacity to manage their stock points, their total supply chain, and as I said before, also to be able to have the people trained and developed that actually can manage all that, because those are big numbers. That means in order to get all the products on the table and in the supermarket and in the restaurants and in the stores, it has an enormous request on the overall supply chain management and overall transport capacity and capability that is needed. And that's exactly why we make the investments, but it's also why we use our global expertise on the one hand to manage that, and on the other hand, our local experience. So if you take Indonesia, for example, we've been there for over 10 years. So we got very well trained local staff, blended with people that have worked abroad and gone back to Indonesia. So that means that we got a good blend there of global expertise, local knowledge, to be able to manage those big figures. But you're absolutely right. This is exactly the reason why we are making these investments, because we absolutely do see the need for our customers to be able to manage this enormous growth over there.
So the initiative is massive, Oscar. You've got to spend $52 million. You've got to double your vehicles. You've got to hire 70% more staff. And you've got to add 60% more warehouse space. And it's not easy to do that when speed is highly of the essence. How much pressure is there on you from HQ to get these things done and dusted and start doing the right business?
Obviously, there's always the right pressure where there is the right potential, right? And that's the way it should be, and that's what keeps us all rolling. And just as much pressure as I get is what the rest of the organization have in a sense of being motivated and eager to deliver this growth. Because I think what you see and what you also feel when I travel and when I talk with my organizations, but also when you walk the streets, is you feel that buzz and of motivation and eagerness to really make this happen. And I think that's within our organization very important, is the whole motivation and of the staff to actually deliver these numbers. And yes, a little bit of pressure, that always helps.
Well, Indonesia is not an easy place to do business. Ask Astro, ask Maybank, ask AirAsia. And these are big companies that have gone to Indonesia and tried to make a fist of it. But, you know, it's not an easy environment, because you've got an unpredictable regulatory environment. You've got a high level of corruption. You've got inadequate infrastructure and rising labor costs. So all these measured against or your needs, your KPIs to deliver these increased assets, how tough is it? Which is the biggest challenge to the organization?
Now, I think the fact that the market is difficult is for us also means that we can add more value to our customers. Because the fact that we've been over there for more than 10 years, we can actually help our customers grow. Because in the end, those growth numbers that we're talking about are the growth numbers of our customers. And by having quite a lengthy, more than 10 years experience on the ground, mixed with our global knowledge, our global standards, our global ways of working, mixed with the local knowledge, actually gives us the opportunity to provide and to help our customers grow in a market like Indonesia. With the infrastructure that there is, we know how to handle that and how to work over there because we've done it for several years.
Well, timelines get extended, budgets get overrun, as we know. It's not easy to build warehouses, hire more people. And inflation, of course, is one of the biggest concerns because the cost of everything seems to go up. According to BofA ML, Bank of America Merrill Lynch, they reckon that in the second half of 2013, inflation is going to be about 6.6%. That's official. Real inflation could be a lot higher. How are you dealing with these potential cost overruns?
Well, I think those are things we know, right? So those are things you can anticipate on and you can work with. That's actually something that we anticipate on when we plan in those markets. Plus, the other aspect is that is part of a fast growing market. So those are things that you have to take in consideration when you do make those steps in those markets.
Is it a correct assumption to say that because business is booming, you can pass on these higher costs to customers?
Yes, but partly because what our customers also want to see, and that's I think the other added value is how much you can beat inflation. Right, you can't obviously beat it fully, but by one of the things that we try to do is we have programs where we look at continuous improvement and process improvement plans, where we together with our customer or without a customer look at how we can optimize, find cost savings, find supply chain optimizations in order to continuously find efficiencies. And efficiency improvements in the supply chains, and that's obviously we see that's one of the things that our customers are needing is that we have continuous improvement programs as DHL supply chain.
Now, the global talent for shortage is a global issue, but none more so than ASEAN and Asia. You've got a plan to increase your staff size by 65% to 25,000 people within just a couple of years. Now, this obviously is a massive undertaking. How do you plan to do this?
Yeah, and I think that's I fully agree. That's the biggest aspect. You can build buildings, you can buy trucks, but people is the most important agenda we have, and that's why if you take overall APEC, we have about 40 operation simulation centers where we train staff in supply chain, in warehouse management, in warehouse operations, in order to be able to actually supply these numbers, because these numbers are not just available in the market. We have to train people and we have to develop people, and that's those investments in those operation simulation centers are done exactly for that reason, to be able to differentiate in the market, to offer our global levels of quality with our local expertise, and having sufficient trained, well-trained people to actually deliver that.
Now, your patch, of course, South and Southeast Asia, some of the biggest emerging markets, some of the most frontier of markets. But in these countries, typically, corruption is very much the order of the day. What is the policy with regards to this particular issue?
I think the answer is obvious. We absolutely stay away from that. And I think what helps us a lot is our brand.
How do you stay away when you're building warehouses, you're buying lorries, you're obtaining rights to land for massive warehouses? How do you deal? How can you walk away from a particularly optimal location when, you know, some government official says to you, "Scratch my back, Oscar"?
I think our brand helps us there. Because we have a certain reputation, and that reputation works both ways. Our customers, from the one hand, expect us to be that way, but also the market knows that DHL stays far away from this, and that absolutely helps us in that situation.
So, you'll walk away from a location when it happens, if it happens.
Sure.
Has it ever happened to you in this neck of the woods, Oscar?
We obviously stay away from it.
Now, last question. I mean, you are owned by Deutsche Post, which is a German listed company. German attributes of precision, of course, accuracy, discipline, rigor. How does that translate into the DHL supply chain division in South and Southeast Asia?
I think we find a very nice blend between local expertise, being local and local market, because of the fact that most of our organizations are actually managed by local organizations, but that nicely blended with global standards, global quality levels, global training, so that we actually, that our customers can see a consistency across the world. But on the other hand, we also got the good touch and feel with the local market by actually being managed by local organizations, by local management in the different countries. So I think we've been able to find a nice blend between being local on the one hand, but have a global consistency on the other hand throughout.
Oscar, good luck with trying to conquer South and Southeast Asia.
Thank you very much
for spending time with us. That was Oscar de Bock, the South and Southeast Asia Chief Executive of the Supply Chain Division of DHL, the global logistics firm, BFM 89.9.
The BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by the CIMB Group, Southeast Asia's leading universal bank. BFM 89.9, the business station.